Well, yesterday, some of you we watched the film on Khodorkovsky, because we decided democratically with Lauri that I inverse the order of presentations, and today we shall speak about the Khodorkovsky case and about the Article 18 of the European Convention, how to interpret it, what are its possibilities and its limits. You remember perhaps when you watched the film that the lawyer there in the entrance of the Moscow District Court announced that the case is totally politically covered. Yes, it was, it is the opinion of the majority of the public opinion, or what is called public opinion in the world. Nevertheless, the European Court of Human Rights didn't find the political elements in the judgment on Khodorkovsky number one, and concerning his arrest and detention on remand. And the problem is why the European Court did so. To reply to this difficult question, we must, of course, to see all the history of the application of this Article 18. Article 18, I think that you have it in your machines, but those who don't have it before your eyes, I can reproduce, I give a watch and the meaning of this article. Article 18 of the Convention provides the restrictions permitted under the Convention to the state rights and freedoms shall not be applied for any other purpose than those for which they have been prescribed. Any purpose other than those for which they have been prescribed. No word about political motivations, yes? Well, and when we go to the this article, you see that this article is closely linked with two other articles, Article 14, discrimination, and Article 17, abuse of rights. And all these three articles don't have that independent existence. As underlined on many occasions by the European Court, they must be linked always with other norms of the Convention, and then the Court can examine if the norms violated by respondent states are also linked with these Articles 14, 17, or 18. And the European Commission and the old Court were very prudent and care with these articles. And for the first time, when the court dealt with this Article 18, it was a decision of 14th July 1974 in the case Kammer versus Netherlands, in which the court underlined for the first time that Article 18 doesn't have an independent existence without other articles. In the famous case, Handyside versus United Kingdom, the prohibition to distribute in British schools a book on sexual education published in Denmark, also the authors of this application evoked this disposal, Article 18 and also 14, but the court concluded with a small majority to a violation of Article 10, liberty of speech, didn't find the violation of Article 14 in combination with Article 10, and also sent a message that there was no sufficiently proofs. Of course, this position of the Commission at under of the old court was many occasions criticized by observers, by scholars, and by liberal lawyers. And many of them comprised this famous Oxford edition, the European Convention on Human Rights, of Jacobs, are speaking about the marginalization of the Article 18 by the practice of the European Court. Some scholars, for example, Italians, and for example, the former judge and my friend Vladimir Zagrebetsky, in their recent publication, Commentario Breve alla Convenzione Europea, 2012, they underlined that it was a very prudent and wise position of the court to avoid abstract and speculative interpretation of the convention. As you see, there are different approaches between scholars and between even between judges. That's because for many years the Article 18 was a kind of a shadow article, if you want. But the very famous interpreter of the European Convention, Vincent Berger, the present jurisconsult of the court, before the reform of the court in 1998, sent the message that the future court perhaps will change his position on this article. And what's happened? We must come back in any sense because even the former court and the former commission dealt with these issues in some cases. For example, Engel versus Netherlands, and disciplinary sanctions against a soldier who left his regiment, and he also complained with Articles 10 in combination with 18. And the most perhaps known case of the series was the case Jonk, Baljat and van der Brink versus Netherlands, or where the Dutch militaries refused to go to a war in Lebanon, and they were persecuted. And also they complained before the court that not only the rights concerning Article 13 were violated, but also Article 18. But the court didn't find the necessity to deal separately with the Article 18 because they didn't present sufficient proofs permitting the court to go ahead to this case. Well, and one exception, perhaps, where the court dealt with the Article 18 was two cases of the former court, Akdivar versus Turkey, where the complaint concerned the destruction by military forces of Kurdish villages, and where the court didn't find violation of Article 18 and 14, lack of proofs. And the famous case Lukanov versus Bulgaria. Lukanov was a very known politician in Bulgaria, former vice president of the Council of Ministers, and one of the leaders of the opposition. He was arrested in 1992. And he complained, before to be killed in 1996, that his arrest was politically motivated. But perhaps he had bad lawyers, because the court unanimously refused to reject this Article 18 in combination with Article 5 as ill-founded. And even his advocates insisted on the fact that his arrest was politically motivated. Well, but we see that In the moment of the reform of the court in 1998, the court had this kind of case law, a border between the former and new court. And as Vincent Berger sent this message, the troops came quite immediately after the constitution of the new court. And the first time when the court dealt seriously with Article 18 was the case Anthony Gordon Oates versus Poland. Oates was an Australian businessman who left Australia because he was persecuted for false information, tax evasion, etc., and found a refuge in his motherland, Poland, because he was of the Polish origin. And he was extradited by Polish authorities, and he complained before the court that he had a real danger to be persecuted for political motives in Australia. But the court held that, taking into account the arguments of the applicant, the court didn't find prima facie proofs leading to the conclusion of the violation of the Article 18 of the Convention, and this complaint was rejected. The crucial point in the case law was the case Gusinski versus Russia. The case Gusinski is very known by the historians of the modern Russia. Nevertheless, I can reply, remind you of some facts. Gusinski was one of the oligarchs, friend of Khodorkovsky. You saw him yesterday by in this movie, because he was one of the well-accepted oligarchs of the post-Soviet Russia. And he made many useful things for the power. For example, during the electoral campaign for the election of President Yeltsin, because Gusinski controlled many mass media, TV stations, etc. But, of course, there was a struggle for property, as you saw yesterday in the film, and he bought some actions of so-called Mediamost company, and Russian video company, and there was some problems with authorities. He was for the first time as a witness in this case, and when he came once to the prosecutor general office, he was arrested and he became a suspect, and he spent 3 days in remand prison. I remember this time. All the mass media, all the channels, CNN, etc., was near this Butyrka prison. The best restaurants of Moscow sent their dishes to this poor Gusinski, who risked to die, or etc., etc. And 3 days after, he was liberated. 3 days after, he was liberated. Not because he was pardoned or amnestied, because there was amnesty declared by the State Duma, but for the fact that he signed an agreement with the Gazprom company, who had also his media holding, sending all his actions of Russian media to Gazprom. And he signed this agreement with the Gazprom, and the Minister of Telecommunications and Mass Media, Leshin, had this imprudent movie. He got assigned this agreement. Well, and immediately Gusinski flew in his personal plane, of course, to Spain, he was detained also some months, but this is another story. But he renounced this agreement, saying that he was forced to sign this agreement. He was put in jail with the purpose to exercise on him a pressure and to let him sign this agreement. And of course he sent this complaints to the European Court, and the European Court concluded not only to a violation of Article 5 of the Convention, but also to Article 18 in combination of with this article, because his arrest for the court had other purposes than those for which he had been prescribed. It's exactly applying Article 18 without any political motivation. Because it was a proved case of state racket, nothing with politics. Economic, nothing personal, only business, as people say. Nothing political, only business. And that's because this case became a pilot, a leading case in any sense for the case law of the court, and this leading case was applied in many occasions. For instance, in the case Chebotari versus Moldavia. Chebotari was also an eminent businessman in Moldavia, the president of the energetic company Moldova Energo. And this company pleaded before the European Court for the violations of its rights, Oferta Plus versus Moldova. And the Minister of Justice made everything to convince Chebotari to withdraw the application from the European Court because it was not good for the image of the democratic Moldova. And he refused to withdraw. Immediately, criminal prosecution was organized against him because all of them had something to be on their consciousness. And he was also put on jail for some weeks. He refused to withdraw his application, and the court found, first of all, in Oferta Plus also the violation of Article 34, and finally in Chebotari case the court concluded that the facts of this case were very similar to those in the case of Gusinski versus Russia, paragraph 47, and the court concluded to the violation of Article 18 combined with Article 5, right to freedom. You see that in this case the court applied a severe criteria of proof, and also the so-called Gusinski test to the case concerning another country. But the court didn't decide to deal with this article in the first case of Lebedev versus Russia, but in the second case, Lebedev versus Russia, Lebedev, Platon Lebedev, you saw him yesterday in the movie, he was the co-accused in the Khodorkovsky case. In Lebedev versus Russia number 2, in this decision, the court recognized as admissible Article 18, as it did it in the decision on admissibility in the first Khodorkovsky case. Understand? The message was sent that these two applications evoked serious reasons, allegedly improper reasons, for their criminal prosecution in the light of Article 18. As you remember, the first case of Khodorkovsky concerns only two episodes of his story. It's his arrest by night time in Novosibirsk in November 2003. His preventive detention independent investigation. That's all. That's all. And the conditions in remand prison. As the remand prison, you saw yesterday that even his lawyer recognized that the conditions are rather satisfactory. Nevertheless, this great number of advocates who accompanied this case before the European Court, they esteemed necessary also to complain on the conditions of detention, and the court found only one violation of Article 3 concerning conditions in the courtroom once he was in the cage. Yes. And for the rest, he declined the violation of Article 3. Of course, the court found violation of Article 5 on several elements. Legitimate aim of his incarceration. The court didn't find violation of Article 5, Paragraph 1, but he found the violation for other issues, especially concerning the procedure of his appeals concerning these coercive measures. But coming back to the main problem, Article 18, the court reproduced the materials given by the lawyers of Khodorkovsky, reaction of international organizations, NGOs, and political figures in the criminal prosecution of the applicant. It's a paragraph 85. There was a special rapporteur of Parliament, Assembly of Council of Europe, of course, who concluded that there are elements as an outspoken political opponent and intimidation, and etc., etc. Also, they evoked some judgments of foreign courts. For example, one of the decisions of the London Extradition Court in the case Chernyshova and Marusha versus Russia, where the British judge concluded, it's more likely than not that the prosecution of Mr. Khodorkovsky is politically motivated, etc., etc. Also, the same decision of Nicosia District Court of Cyprus concerning the extradition of former UBS managers, and some other European jurisdictions. And the court, first of all, was obliged to decide to which article of the convention the Article 18 must be attached, because the complaint, first of all, concerned the entire criminal prosecution of Khodorkovsky. In paragraph 254, the court decided, in the light of the above, the court will consider the applicant's allegations under Article 18 of the Convention in conjunction with his complaints under Article 5 of the Convention. But the court did the job who must be made by the lawyers, very well qualified, very well paid lawyers, who didn't do it. They complained in general, political persecution in general, the entire criminal prosecution. And the court found one Article 5 that he decided to apply. And the court, first of all, sent a message. I can also quote the paragraph 255. A mere suspicion that the authorities used their powers for some other purpose than those defined in the Convention is not sufficient to prove that Article 18 was breached. And then the court, for the first time in its practice, developed its methodology of these criteria of proof in context of the Article 18. And he underlined, the court found the court reminded its positions in Gusinski and in Chebotaro. I can also quote it. Thus, in Gusinski, the court accepted that applicants' liberty was restricted into area for a purpose other than those mentioned in Article 5. The court in that case based its findings on the agreement signed between the detainee and a federal minister of the press. It was clear from the agreement that the applicant detention was applied in order to make him sell his media company to the state. See, Gustin. In Chebotaro versus Moldova, the court found a violation of Article 18 of the Convention in a context where the applicant's arrest was visibly linked to an application pending before the court. However, the court knows that there is nothing in the court's case law to support the applicant's suggestion that there were a prima facie case of improper motive is established, a burden of proof shifts to the respondent government. The court considers that the burden of proof in such a context should rest with the applicant. And the court shifted the burden of proof. Normally it's the task of the state to prove that the state didn't violate it. But in this case, in view of this huge and rather severe complaint that entire criminal prosecution was politically motivated, the court told to the lawyers, please prove us the seriousness of your allegations. And he developed his reasoning, lack of these proofs, and some interesting motifs I can cite. You can find it, of course, in the text. In the paragraph 257, the court underlined, in particular, the court acknowledges that the applicant had political ambitions, which admittedly went counter to the mainstream line of the administration, that the applicant, as a rich and influential man, could become a serious political player and was already supporting opposition parties, and that it was a state-owned company which benefited most from the dismantlement of the applicant's industrial empire. But the court continued. High political status doesn't grant immunity. The court is persuaded that the charges against the applicant amounted to a reasonable suspicion with the means of the Article 5, paragraph 1c of the Convention. First conclusion of the court. The second conclusion concerning the combination of factors mentioned above caused many people to believe that applicant persecution was driven by the desire to remove him from the political scene and at the same time to appropriate his wealth, the court continues. The applicant strongly relies on those opinions. In particular, he relies on the resolutions of political institutions, NGOs, statements of various public figures, etc. The court took note of those opinions. However, it must recall that political process and educative process are fundamentally different. It is often much easier for a politician to take a stand than for a judge, since the judge must base his decision only on evidence in the legal sense. I repeat this phrase, the judge must base his decision on evidence in the legal sense, not on emotional sense or political sense, common knowledge sense, but in legal sense. And the court, if you want, draws this red line around the Article 18. Concerning the findings of several European courts in the proceedings involving former Yugos managers and Yugos assets, the court concluded. However, the evidence and legal arguments before those courts might have been different from those in the case under examination. More importantly, assuming that all courts had the same evidence and arguments before them, the court reiterates that its own standard of truth applied in Article 18, cases is very high and may be different from those applied domestically. It's also in our principle of the interpretation of the article 18. And the court concludes, however, it's not sufficient for this court to conclude that the whole legal machinery of the respondent's state in the federal case was ab initio misused, that from the beginning to the end the authorities were acting with bad faith and in flagrant disregard of the convention. This is a very serious claim which requires an incontrovertible and direct proof. Such proof, in contrast to the Businski case cited above, is absent from the case under examination. And the court concludes to a non-violation of the Article 18 of the convention. And he concluded unanimously, Judges Razakis, Vaich, Kovler, Kajiv, Spielman, Malinder, Nikolaou. Well, and you see that this judgment was, of course, appealed by the applicant party, and the panel of the Grand Chamber refused to reconsider the case, and the judgment became final the 29 November 2011, when the panel of the Grand Chamber rejected this appeal.
Can I ask a question?
Yes?
Could you please repeat the distinction which was made between the evidence in the legal sense and in the motion sense?
Yeah, but you see that the court,
It was a consideration of the court.
Of the court. Yes, yes.
I think I'm actually quite amazed because what means that evidence in an emotional sense? What is that?
No, the emotional sense. I added this phrase myself.
Okay.
The phrase of the court: the judge must base his decision on evidence in the legal sense.
Which point? What?
Legal sense. Only legally valuable arguments. As, for example, in the case of Businski, the copy of the agreement signed also by the representative of state authorities. See? In Chibotaro sent to the court the letter of the Minister of Justice to him, asking him to withdraw his case from the European Court. It was a legal evidence, a material evidence, yes. Concerning the declarations of political leaders, parliamentary assembly, or even decisions of foreign courts dealt with the demand of extradition of UCAS managers in Britain, in Netherlands, and in Cyprus. And they refused the extradition of Russia, motivating that their persecution could be politically motivated in Russia. Yes. But the court underlined, as I cited, that he has another criteria applied in this case because the evidences were quite different before the European court and before the domestic courts. And on this base, he concluded to the non-violation article 18, lack of legal proofs, legally available proofs. And the same was done in the UCAS case, where the court found many violations concerning the procedure, concerning Article 1, Protocol 1, in different senses, violation here, non-violation here, very, very nuanced judgment, but the court didn't find the violation of Article 18 in view of the persecution of UCAS as a legal entity for tax evasions. And that's because the court, in this case, also unanimously concluded to non-violation of Article 18. The court was divided on different articles, but was unanimous on the Article 18 issue. And we see that these two cases, last cases, Khodorkovsky and UCAS, were rather relevant for the future case law of the court, because the court knows a real invasion of politically motivated applications. Very very different countries, first of all Ukraine, some other countries, Georgia, Azerbaijan, and some others. And I would like to analyze with you the recent case, Lutsenko versus Ukraine. You see, Lutsenko versus Ukraine, who is not yet final. Why who is not yet final? Because, as you know, both parties have a right to ask to reconsider the case, and the case is still pending before the panel of the chamber. But there is interesting to analyze this case, because in this case the court found the violation of Article 18. For which reasons? Which reasons? First of all, who is Mr. Lutsenko? Mr. Lutsenko is a former minister of the interior of Ukraine, and the leader of the opposition party Narodna Samooborona, popular self-defense, if I can translate it. And when he ceased to be a minister, he was accused for different things. For example, he unlawfully arranged for different work-related benefits for his driver. Yes. Also, he arranged the allocation of one-room apartment to his driver. Then also some other cases was suspected of unlawful authorization of search and seizure activities against an individual. Who was this individual? This individual was the most known Ukrainian oligarch, Ahmed, from Ukraine, yeah. Well, who was, of course, one of the sponsors of the actual President Yanukovych. Well, sorry, perhaps if it's the court? No, it's not the court. The applicant, he was under the undertaking to not leave the city. He continued giving interviews in order to mobilize the public opinion about the purposes of his persecution, etc. And he was arrested on 26 December 2010, and he was arrested near his house by the Office of the Security Services, and in the framework of the second criminal case. And he was taken to the Pechersky court, also so famous as the Basmani court in Moscow. In Kyiv they have the Basmani court called Pechersky court. And he was held in jail for some months, and he was found guilty and sentenced for 4 years imprisonment and confiscation of property in February 2012. As he was in jail, the court gave priority to his case, and but refused to apply Rule 39 of the rules of the court, immediate measures. Well, and by other, except other complaints, the advocates of the applicant supported the idea that his arrest was politically motivated. Politically motivated. For this purpose, they presented many documents, Freedom House report, U.S. State Department of U.S. Department of State report, European Parliament resolution on Ukraine, legal monitoring in Ukraine, Danish Helsinki Committee, etc., etc. And they also insisted that that Ukrainian courts cannot be considered independent, and at least in cases related to politics. And the conclusion of the court were rather simple. To my professional consciousness and experience, even rather simple, and even too simple. Why? Because the only element that of proof for the court was that he was put in jail with the only purpose to stop his allegations before the press during his press conferences.
Yes,
to cut him
what?
Yes, and what's more interesting, as in Khodorkovsky case, the court stated, I can cite the paragraph 101. They reproduced the statement of the government, and they further noted that the applicant did not invoke Article 18 in his application to the court, and the only allegation of possible political pressure had been made by the applicant in his request for priority. Well, and also the government noted that apart from the affirmative text, there was no evidence that the reason of the applicant's detention has been his activities as a political figure and a member of the party in opposition to the government, as opposed to the existing suspicion of his having committed a crime. And the applicant replied that he was considered as one of the two of the most prominent opposition leaders. He noted also that the media was full of pictures of him behind bars, which was done to plant in the public opinion the idea that he was a dangerous criminal. It also convinced the court that it's sufficient element to conclude on political motives of his persecution. And what concerned the court's assessment, unlike the Khodorkovsky case, you can find only 2-3 paragraphs concerning the court's reasoning. First of all, the court notes that his persecution happened in the context with the external observers described as politically motivated persecution of the opposition leader. The applicant's case, along with the case of the former Prime Minister Tymoshenko, attracted important attention both nationally and internationally. In these circumstances, the applicant's submissions made at the initial stage as the possible political pressure on him before the upcoming elections, as well as his complaint that one of the reasons for his detention has been his communication with the media and his public disagreement with the accusations against him, are sufficient reasons to examine the issue of the applicant's detention from the point of view of the Article 18. And the court's conclusion is the following. The prosecuting authorities seeking the applicant's arrest explicitly indicated the applicant's communication with the media as one of the grounds for his arrest and accused him of distorting public opinion about crimes committed by him, discrediting the prosecuting authorities and influencing the upcoming trial in order to avoid criminal liability. In the court's opinion, such reasoning by the prosecuting authorities clearly demonstrates their attempt to punish the applicant for politically disagreeing with accusations against him and for asserting his innocence, which he had the right to do. In such circumstances, the court cannot but find that the restriction of the applicant's liberty permitted under Article 5, paragraph 1c, was applied not only for the purpose of bringing him before the competent legal authority on reasonable suspicion of having committed an offense, but also for other reasons.
What reasons? What did say? What reasons?
For others. What? And there was recorded a violation of Article 18 of the Convention.
The position of the court. And you see that the reason is
little bit different, quite different. That was in Khodorkovsky's case. That proves that the case law of the court of this very sensitive issue is not yet rather stable, because I say often to my other than Strasbourg colleagues that in reality there are five courts in Strasbourg, five sections. Each section is sovereign. Some sections are more liberal, other more severe, etc. But you see the difference of approaches between this case is evident. That's because it would be quite interesting to follow the hearings on Tymoshenko case, which will take place in 28th of August, in 3 weeks, in Strasbourg. You're welcome to follow online, perhaps, but it will be a very interesting issue because, of course, Tymoshenko case is more evident case of political motivation. For me personally. I am not in this case because I can express my opinion. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are also, between other complaints, the complaints concern Article 18, combined with Article 5, and which we shall see the end of the story. Well, we have some minutes for questions, if you want.
I have one question to you, which is coming back to this Khodorkovsky case. I thought it was partly surprising that everyone agreed with this position that, you know, this burden of proof thing and generally that it was unproven. But what to think of this argument of the selectiveness of justice, in the sense that even though it may be true that Khodorkovsky's activities violated certain laws, that this was the, you know, common practice, and then it is interesting from the point of view of executing justice if you point out this guy to punish him, but everyone else gets unpunished. So it raises questions: why only this guy then? Why not punish everybody?
Yeah. But of course, it's a general sense question. I understand it. Let's reason like lawyers. First of all, the main complaint in the first Khodorkovsky, was his condition of his arrest, detention on remand, and the conditions in courtroom. That's all. The court concluded that as to the legitimate act of his arrest, there was no violation of Article 5, paragraph 1c, because it was done with the purpose to lead him before the justice. Yes. And it was the first issue. There were some discrepancies in the procedure of appeal, but it's another story. And that's because when the advocates, because they play before the mass media, of course, they invoked political motivation for the whole prosecution as a whole. There are four Khodorkovsky applications. They decided to apply it in the first case. In the first case, concerning very technical issues for the judges: arrest, motivation, detention on remand, etc. And they didn't present sufficient motives for this. They adverted to the court all the information that they gathered from everywhere, with the purpose to let us understand that all the prosecution is politically motivated. It's not the best methodology of to prove if you are a professional lawyer, if you're a professional advocate. Yes, you are not only a commentator of a TV station or radio station. And that's because the court was very severe with this. If you want this temptation to instrumentalize the court in the political struggle. But he sent a severe message. If you want that the court concludes to the violation, please follow the Gusinski test. Present us sufficiently convincing documents, evidences. That was not done. That the court sent a severe message to other lawyers. I must say that the lawyers of Tymoshenko, they studied, on the other hand, say, à la loupe, the text not only of Khodorkovsky's case, but also the Yufa's case of my article on in the Human Rights Review, etc. Why? Because they wanted to receive some lessons from their Russian colleagues why they didn't win on this issue in Strasbourg. Of course, they have the case Khodorkovsky number 2, the first trial, then Khodorkovsky number 3, his stay in Siberia, Khodorkovsky number 4, the second trial. We shall see how they will present their materials and their damages, and perhaps the court will find violation, because in any case, in Khodorkovsky number 2 case, the court communicate to Russian authorities the complaint concerning Article 18. It proved that the court evaluated it rather seriously. We shall see the continuation.
Maybe you can say also a few words on this other separate case on Yukos shareholders' property rights. What was, I don't know, it's somehow, as a story, it's linked.
Yes, it was linked, but also the court decided to separate the criminal prosecution of Platon Lebedev, of Khodorkovsky, and the dispute of property in the Yukos case. That's because, from the beginning, because evacuated the Article 18 from its field of consideration. Because the case was sufficiently difficult and complex case, and its examination was not an easy task. I withdrew from this case in office, and there were other two judges who were national judges. And in this case, of course, the name of Khodorkovsky and Lebedev appears, of course, in the statement of facts. But the court preferred to deal with the other issues. First of all, is the tax invasion enters in the field of Article 1, Protocol 1? We have the famous Jussila case versus Finland, where the court for the first time established that if there are disputes before the courts on tax problems, the court can deal with these cases. But if there is a tax fiscal politics of the state, it's in abysmal ratio materia, the court in the unique competition of states. And the court also divided these two issues in the Lucas case, and also considered the procedure of the examination of Yukos case before the courts of arbitration in Russia. That's because there were two main issues, Article 6 and 1, Protocol 1. So,
my last question or comment before the others get the floor. So one theory, maybe critical of Strasbourg, would be that basically this whole Yukos and Khodorkovsky affair, that it's too big a piece for Strasbourg to digest, and therefore Strasbourg to some extent find ways to avoid it. Because imagine what would happen if Strasbourg would say that yes, Yukos shareholders are right, and the Russian state would say, oh, how much was it? $100 billion or something. And the question is, that doable? Or would such a decision, you know, break the relationship between Russia and Strasbourg, you know?
The Yukos case, fairly speaking, is the case for Strasbourg International Arbitration Court. Not for the Strasbourg Court of Human Rights. It's too energy and in spite of to deal with other serious cases. So we are dealing with Yukos case. We have dozens of Greek cases concerning the property, oil companies, aircrafts, etc., etc. Bosporus, Hawaii, Loli, etc. Many cases concerning property rights. And I think that Article 1, Article 1 is the main danger for the court from this point of view. Mm. But
It fits. In international law, we are so used to the limits of international courts. It's mostly about those limits and how these courts, to some extent, fail.
Yes.
And people have, you know, contrasted the European Court of Human Rights as something special. You know, at least usually there is not a problem of jurisdiction in the ICJ, for example.
Yeah.
You can't even take a country that doesn't want to be there to the International Court of Justice, and that is different in the European Court of Human Rights. But I read you that. Even so, there are some limits to what Strasbourg can do.
No, and the box of Pandora was opened in 2000 in this famous Comengersol case versus Portugal, where the court, for the first time in its history, awarded a moral damage to an enterprise. Enterprise, not to a physical person, but to a moral person, yes. It was also a kind of revolution of the case law of the court. And after Comengersol, we have dozens and thousands of cases of this Article 1, Protocol 1.
Yes, in Russia we also follow this decision in law some years ago. In case of Kommersant, I think we will use this.
Kommersant in the newspaper, yes. But it was mostly Article 10 issue, also Article 1, Protocol 1, yes. You see, but in any case, I think that of course, the temptation is rather great to politicize even Greek cases. When you see some cases from Greece concerning the expropriation of property before the Olympic Games in Athens, you can understand the meaning. When we have now some cases from Sochi, from Russia, and you can imagine also the impact, the political impact of these cases. Yes, it's inevitable. I don't know if we shall receive some complaints from Britain concerning the London Olympic Games. I hope no, but who knows, you never know. Yes, that's especially confiscation, expropriation cases are a huge burden on the court. But nevertheless, we must deal with them. Well, some other questions?
You are depressed, guys, by the information received from me.
It was not my purpose. My purpose is to say you the truth. Even unpleasant truth. Yes. That's why I fix it.
Well, I actually will come back to that sentence, the evidence in the legal sense. I'm still a little bit amazed about that, because in my opinion, there's only evidence.
Yeah.
We should add. I think that the justice of the court shouldn't add in the legal sense.
No, there is, of course, the fear of evidence, etc., used by domestic courts, by international courts, etc. But I think that the court in this kind of sensitive cases consistently used this restrictive interpretation of proofs, only proofs in legal sense. You see, what we have other cases, for example, conditions on remand or conditions or beaten by the police, I'll speak about tomorrow, we accept some proofs beyond reasonable doubt, etc., even testimonies of the witnesses, etc. We cannot verify this testimony, but we accept it because it concerns the absolute rights of the individual, right to life, right to security, etc. And in this second category of case, of course, the burden of proof is less severe than in sensitive cases like Khodorkovsky. Others. We had also the case Bettina Craxi versus Italy, interception of his telephone calls, etc. We didn't find a political element in this case, yes. We found a violation of Article 8, yes, private life, etc., but didn't find Article 8 an issue. It was evident that there was a political. Who are interested in Bettina Craxi's conversations?
Yes.
Not his wife, I But you see, he didn't develop this issue and his advocates in his complaints, and we didn't find violation. We didn't even recognize it admissible. I can give you many other examples, Papon versus France, etc., also politically. So. Sanchez versus France, the famous couples, well-known terrorists, etc. But in all these cases, the court a little bit is more severe with burden of proof than in common cases.
For me, just one more thought. I think one interesting aspect is, it's a tricky one, this burden of proof, because, so basically the court says that the burden of proof is on the complaining individual, not the state. And
yeah.
at the circuit, it makes sense, because, you know, otherwise you put in the state into the position that, you know, prove that you're not a camel, prove that you didn't have ulterior motives when you did something, right? But I think at the same time, the fact remains that you know, Council of Europe countries also have very different histories. The fact about Russian history is that if we take the Soviet history, for example, I think the common agreement is that, let's say, the independence of courts more generally was not, you know, of such nature as I don't know, somewhere in France. And then it could come from the history of actually court cases being influenced, let's say, by the executive. Then in a way, still, it is interesting, you know, how should one prove if you argue that there is this political motive? But this is more like a way of asking it.
Well, see you tomorrow.